This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home studio just north of New York City. Taylor, big day today. Look, we had to kind of split up our tapings this morning because you had an appointment to get your wisdom teeth checked.
Yeah, we got a clean bill of health there. Like, just keep scrubbing those open wounds. The more you do that, the better you'll get. And actually, Buster, I got to call you out, man. We were supposed to get started at 6:45. You are no show. The famed I get up at 6 o'clock or, 4:30 in the morning. Didn't post.
Yeah, I was up at 4 o'clock. Okay. I was up at 4 o'clock. Did you text me to say, yeah, I'm ready to go? Because see, I just assume no one is going to be functional at that hour, and especially not you.
I put it in my rundown, 6:45. Guess your reading comprehension skills, they're slipping, man. You might want to get some Hooked on Phonics or something.
You know what? Best time for me tomorrow to take is 5 a.m. How does that sound?
See you there, Buster.
All right. Look, we had our first exhibition game broadcast in ESPN yesterday. Carl Ravitch, Eduardo Perez, and Tim Kirchen doing the Rays and Red Sox game. It was a lot of fun. They had microphones at Brett Phillips, Juan DeFranco, Kevin Kiermaier, Alex Cora, Kevin Cash, others. A pick to click for me for the Red Sox, Rafael Devers, who looks like he's ready for a big year.
Appreciate. Speaking of loud contact, here's a high drive in the center field. Back on it, Phillips at the wall, and it is gone. Rafi Devers leaves the building. The Red Sox third home run of the inning.
And that was from WEEI. Fernando Tatis Jr. got things going for the Padres. Bases loaded, and this is what happened.
So as mentioned, the base is loaded for the first time this year. Fernando at the dish. And the first pitch to Tatis is launched to deep left field. Slam Diego has come to Arizona. And Tatis, a no-doubter, way up on the berm in left. And the Padres have themselves a 5-run second inning against the Diamondbacks. Tatis' first home run of the spring. It was loud. It was emphatic. And, of course, it was a grand slam.
My. First pitch fastball, center cut. And boy, have we seen that pose often from Fernando Tatis Jr.
That was Tony Gwynn Jr. with the analysis there. When he hit the home run, it was a no-doubter. First pitch fastball. He did a bat flip. He gave a Bartolo Colon-worthy trip around the bases. I actually have the count on that, and I'll be talking about that with David Schoenfield coming up here in a second. Walker Buehler of the Dodgers looks like he's ready to go.
1-2, big curveball. Rough looking back, wondering where that came from.
Tim Nebritt with that call on the Dodgers television network. The Arizona Diamondbacks outfielder Cole Calhoun is going to undergo knee surgery for a meniscus tear. He is in the second year of a 2-year, $16 million deal. We'll get more information here as we move forward about when he could be back on the field. The start of the minor leagues, not surprisingly, is going to be delayed. This was reported by Jeff Passan yesterday. The season had been scheduled to start April 6th, and it looks like they're going to be pushed back until the first week of May, along with games in AA, High A, and Low A. Rio Gomez was on our broadcast yesterday, the son of Pedro Gomez, and he talked about his dad. This is really touching.
And Rio is kind enough to join us now under, obviously, terrible, sad conditions. Rio, thanks so much for spending time with us. I know as people see you here for the first time, they all express their sympathies, their sorrows, and want to know how you and the family are doing.
Yeah, I'd say we're holding up. Seems like every week it gets a little better. Mm-hmm. I guess it's just a lot of, the preparation for the marathon, because it's just never leaves you.
Rio Gomez, a pitcher in the Boston Red Sox organization. And we're going to be hearing more of that interview later in the podcast. It really is amazing to me how much he sounds like his dad. But it was a really nice interview, and it was great to hear from Rio. Before we get to David Schoenfield, to Paul Imbakides, and to Len Casper, the announcer now, play-by-play man for the White Sox on radio, two things I want to mention. First, check out Stephen A's World, streaming weekdays on ESPN+. You can also find the best interviews from Stephen A's World available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcast and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN+. And don't forget, check out Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin weekdays from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN2, and listen to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Used with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting preventive.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Welcome to the show, mate.
Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfeld.
And David Schoenfeld, of course, covers baseball for ESPN. And I'm guessing you had the same experience I have early this week. As exhibition games have started, we get to get back into our old routine of watching games, right? At 12:55, I see the clock. I'm excited. Go downstairs, sit on the couch, and just absorb games, make calls while I'm watching baseball. Pretty cool, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching Angels-Reds last night, which was kind of cool. Hunter Green, remember him, the former number one overall pick? He started for the Reds, and he struggled. A couple other top prospects got into that game. But, yeah, look, it's spring training, but it's still baseball. It's fun to see the highlights and the box scores and all of that.
Anything jump out at you so far that you're like, wow, or cool, or whatever your reactions are? Any first impressions?
Well, I wrote a couple names down from yesterday. Andrew Vaughn hit a home run for the White Sox. And, you know, he was the third overall pick back in 2019. Obviously didn't play last year. You know, the more we're hearing, he has a chance to make that opening day roster. I don't know if that's what you're hearing, roster. He's got to hit his way onto the team. But, you know, his college stats are phenomenal. One of the best college hitters in recent years. He could be their opening day DH.
And I kind of feel like that this might be a year with all the focus on service time manipulation, with a collective bargaining agreement set to expire this winter. If you're a team in that position, you have an elite prospect. Not only is there a lot more scrutiny of players who are kept in the minor leagues, but I think you can reasonably bet that the whole service time manipulation thing is going to be addressed in the next CBA. So in the end, it may not pay off to do that this spring.
No, and look, and especially in that division, it could be a tight, maybe even a three-team race with Chicago and Minnesota and Cleveland. One win might make a difference. And if you think Andrew Vaughn can give you one win over whoever DH is, you know, in April and May, that could be a big difference. So Tony La Russa, you know, I think he's more old school. I don't think he cares about Andrew Vaughn being on the team 7 years from now. He wants to win in 2021. So if his opinion matters and all, Andrew Vaughn might make that roster.
I just want to note that you absolutely put it on a tee for me right there. You said Tony La Russa is old school, and I'm not going to say anything, okay? I'm just going to leave that one alone. We'll be talking about Tony La Russa coming up with Len Casper in just a bit here. Yesterday, Fernando Tatis Jr. hits a home run, and boy, is he in midseason form, not only with a bat flip, but I did a count on how long it took him to get around the bases, 27 seconds. And I was thinking it's spring training. And just to put that into context, Bartolo Colon's home run when he rounded the bases, 31 seconds. Fernando Tatis Jr., who's a lot faster than Bartolo Colon, 27 seconds.
That's funny. I was thinking the same thing. You know, I'm like, boy, that's a really slow home run trot for what, March 1st? Was that what yesterday was? I mean, but yeah. I want to throw something out at you, Buster. I was thinking about this. Is Fernando Tatis the best athlete in baseball history? I mean, last year, via StatCast measurements, he was 100th percentile in exit velocity and hard hit rate, 98th percentile in sprint speed. So he hits the ball as hard as anybody in the game, and he's as fast as almost anybody in the game. Just an absolute phenomenal athlete. How many players in baseball history can we say that about? I came up with a list of four. I want to see if you agree. Willie Mays, who maybe isn't known for his monster home runs, but he hit 50 twice. Mickey Mantle, you know, legendary home run, certainly before his knees went bad. You know, many stories about how fast he was. Bo Jackson, not a great player, but, you know, maybe the best athlete in the game's history. And Mike Trout, you know, anybody else pop into your mind beyond those four?
Babe Ruth, I think he, you know, he was probably underrated a little bit as an athlete because you look at him, you look at his body and say, that guy wasn't a great athlete. Pete Reeser is a name that yep. I know you're going to recognize. You know, I mean, you'd have to be a hardcore baseball fan to really recognize that one. But I think you hit on the big guys. You know, for me, Willie Mays was, I mean, truly, you know, five-tool player with everything that he could do, you know, how far he could, how fast he was, how far he could hit the ball. You know, the stories about Mickey Mantle, I don't think I believe it, but I remember reading one time that he was clocked at 3.4 seconds running to first base. That seems a little crazy to me. Mike Trout, absolutely. In fact, I would still argue that he's a better athlete than Tatis Jr., you know, because I really believe this, that if you gave Mike Trout a month that he could play strong safety in the NFL, like big enough and strong enough where he could drop right in another sport. I've heard amazing things about Fernando Tatis Jr. as a basketball player. I don't know if you could do that with him right away, but Mike Trout, I could see him easily dropping into the NFL with a short amount of training.
Yeah, and Trout, you know, he's probably lost a step, you know, speed-wise. He's still 94th percentile, though, in his top sprint speed. And last year he was 99th percentile in exit velocity. So even though he's a little older, he's still there. I'm with you. He's built like a safety or a linebacker. Barry Bonds might be a guy I throw on that list, although his timing, you know, by the time he was hitting the monster home runs with a little help, he was no longer one of the fastest players. Larry Walker is another name, maybe. Yeah. Phenomenal, just pure athleticism. You know, that guy had hardly played baseball before he signed to go pro. But yeah, Tatis, the fact that you're one of the most powerful hitters and a fast runner, just what a player.
How about Bob Gibson, too? Like, Bob Gibson, you know, he played on the Harlem Globetrotters, if I remember correctly. He had unbelievable sprint speed, and, of course, he was a Hall of Fame baseball player. He was absolutely amazing as an athlete. Bo Jackson, you know, I'll never forget. I was at Vanderbilt when Bo Jackson was at Auburn, and Auburn was coming to Vanderbilt, I think, within a couple of weeks to play a weekend series, and that's when Bo committed to go to the NFL. I remember being so bummed that I couldn't go and see him in person. But yeah, I mean, you know what? I mean, I love those clips of him when he first was playing in the big leagues. That throw when he got Harold Reynolds at home plate, and then that play he made where he runs up the outfield wall.
The thing with Bo, his speed never really came into play because he struck out a lot. You know, so he hit home runs or struck out. He didn't walk, so he didn't really have a chance to, and he wasn't a great base stealer, never really learned how to steal bases. And in the outfield, I think he might have played more left field than center because he didn't really have the natural center field instinct. So his speed really never helped him all that much in baseball. But obviously, pure athlete, you know, in any sport, probably the greatest I've ever seen.
And I'll give you two underrated athletes, just in terms of their ability to do different things. By the end of his career, Greg Maddux had kind of a, you know, he's kind of a chunky body at the end of his career to win that many gold gloves.
18. I just saw that.
Yeah. And be that much in control. That said a lot. And the other one was David Wells. You know, yep. Boomer Wells I covered. And again, he was someone who is a little bit heavy, but you watched him move and he had that very athletic bounce in his step. And as Pat Gillick, the Hall of Fame general manager, once said to me, you know, Boomer was an iconoclast. You know, he was essentially raised by his mom, who, you know, hung out with a biker gang. And Boomer did not like authority figures when he was growing up. And yet somehow he came out of that upbringing with perfect pitching mechanics.
Yeah.
And he could, I you know, would always joke that Boomer, when he's, you know, 75, 80 years old, they're going to bring him back to throw out a first pitch. He's going to throw a strike.
Yeah.
Like, no problem, because of that unbelievable athleticism that he has.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, sometimes we base athleticism on body type, and, you know, great athletes like Babe Ruth can come in all shapes and sizes.
Exactly. All right, before you go, I do want to touch on this story. According to The Athletic, manager Terry Francona, top club officials were made aware of the complaints from a man who says Callaway and his wife had an affair from 2015 to 2017. Earlier in this year, the Indians addressed the question of whether or not Callaway had been involved in sexually harassing women. And they essentially said at that time that they did not have any awareness of that. And so yesterday, when this report came out, the question was, you know, what did the Indians know and when did they know it? And the Indians have publicly said that they were unaware of any inappropriate behavior toward women by Callaway while he was with the team. Look, I don't know how you feel, Dave, that the Indians probably should have been upfront and said, yes, they were aware of some things, but they were not aware of sexual harassment. They should have made it very different, because it's apparent from what we learned yesterday that they were aware of this extramarital affair. And I got to say, I don't know what the Indians as an employer would have been expected to do, even if they were made aware of that.
Yeah, I think the key here is what is MLB going to do moving forward about this culture that exists? Because if you're a woman reporter covering a team, if you're a woman that works in an organization, remember, most teams have hundreds of people that work in their organization. They don't all interact with the players or the coaching staff, but they're there. All these people deserve to be able to do their jobs without being harassed by whether it's a pitching coach or any other employees, a team president, as in the case of the Mariners. So MLB has to figure out a solution to this, because if there's no consequences, and Mickey Callaway, there were no consequences for his actions. The Mets hired him. The Angels hired him as a pitching coach. So I don't know, Buster. Maybe there can be some sort of central clearinghouse. So if the Mets are looking to hire Mickey Callaway, maybe they know the history here. Then they can make a decision whether we want to hire this person. I don't know. But keeping all this behind closed doors and then having it leaked out is just creating an embarrassing situation for everybody.
I agree. I think Major League Baseball needs to come out and announce a new system for dealing with this type of information, as opposed to keeping it locked down. And as Britt Jaroli said on the podcast last week, there need to be consequences, just as you just said. All right, sir, I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Buster.
Here's the rest of the interview that Rio Gomez did during the exhibition broadcast on ESPN on Tuesday.
Now, tell us about the relationship that you and your dad shared. I know it. Eduardo and Tim know all about it. But it was, you know, it was what every father would hope that they had with their son, at least from the outside. You tell me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the connection and, like, the love that we had that tied us together with baseball, obviously, was just second to none. And you know, he was my biggest fan, my biggest supporter. And, you know, there was times where, you know, I didn't even believe in myself during my career, and he was there to push me with that belief. And there was many times where he was even more excited about my own career than I was. So it was always great having him by my side for all that.
Rio, what was it? How would you describe the support that you've received from ESPN and from people all across the industry after your father's death?
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, I didn't know how far his reach really was, especially at the professional level. You know, always I knew, you know, he's Pedro Gomez, ESPN, you know, reporter. And I guess I just assumed, you know, he's just another member of the media. But especially that first week and those first couple days, it was incredible to see the outreach and the support and just all these people who had come forward and reached out to me and, you know, whether it be from people, you know, colleagues at ESPN, other reporters in the industry, you know, athletes, coaches, umpires, just even, you know, fans, people all around, just the baseball world. It's just been incredible.
You also have two younger siblings, your brother Dante and your sister, and your mom also has spoken, you know, within the family. You had told me that Pedro, the way that she said Pedro lived life, and could you explain the way your mom explains how Pedro lived life to the fullest?
Yeah, I mean, he was just he was a very in-the-moment guy. And, you know, growing up, we always had a rule at dinner of just, you know, no phones at the table. And, you know, at the time when you're a kid, I guess you don't really realize the importance or the reasoning why. But I guess as you grow up, you start to feel that. And it's just, you know, he just wanted us to be always connected. And when we were together, we were truly together. And, you know, we able to have that face-to-face interaction. And so that's just how he went about living his whole life. You know, he was really good at making a personal connection and relationship with almost everyone that he ever came across.
Rio, what were some of the things that your dad would tell you? You said that he was, you know, perhaps even more amazed, impressed by your success. What were some of the things that he told you that, you know, will stick with you forever?
Absolutely. You know, I guess he'd always be good at being able to tell me what I needed to hear, regardless if it was good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, growing up, you know, he always, you know, preached to me that you never get too high, never get too low, especially when it comes to baseball, just because, you know, it's not one outing that determines your season or your career or your fate. It's just, you know, it's a collection of work. So when things are going well, you make sure you don't get too high. And when things are going bad, because it's inevitable, something will always go bad, that you make sure you don't put your emotion into it one way or another. And, you know, it just always seemed like he always had the right thing to say. And so after getting to hear it for 26 years of my life, right, a lot of that's going to always be embedded in me.
Yeah, what did it mean to you that your dad sometimes would just unexpectedly show up at a college game or a Cape game or a minor league game and you look up and there's your dad? What did that mean to you?
It meant the world to me. You know, there was times obviously where I'd be struggling and whatever he could do via the phone, obviously from Arizona, whether I was in, you know, spring training or somewhere along the East Coast for minor league affiliate, he tried to always help as best as he could over the phone. And then there'd be times where, I think he realized where no matter what he could say through the phone, that him showing up in person is what I'm going to need. And there was a time when I was in extended spring training in 2018, and I was just, you know, I was having a tough time. I was really upset where I felt like my career was just slipping away, and out of the blue, he just showed up in Fort Myers and surprised me, and he was there for a week, and it was everything I needed to just be able to turn everything around.
And how are things going for you on the baseball field, Rio?
Everything's been great. Obviously, you know, we didn't have 2020, and I'm not there right now in big league camp, and that's okay. I'm just excited to be able to get to play again. I can't wait for April. I can't wait for minor league camp. I can't wait for this season. It feels like the light at the end of the tunnel, at least for me individually.
Right. Well, there are two outs here. I don't want to ask a question and then have the third out be made, but I know I speak for everybody, Rio, when we let you know that you know anybody here at ESPN is part of your family, and we hope, you know, that you will call on us when needed, and we all look forward to seeing your success and express our deepest sympathies for the loss of Pedro.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Himbo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Oh, my goodness. That's way too good for you, Himbo. I mean, you deserve to be made to feel like a nerd the way that the old Open used to have you. Paul Imbakides, Himbo, a researcher at ESPN, who is a honcho on the show. Get up. He tells us he's a head honcho, but Mike Greenberg tells us no, he's just a wild partier. All right, so this week you want to talk about smelly lines.
Yes.
You made that phrase in an email, and I was like, I know I grew up on a dairy farm, and I'm not very exposed to many things, but that was an interesting concept.
So Buster, here's where I'm coming from. Like, I'm trying to do a better job of sort of reading the betting market as a way to predict the season or predict player performance or what have you. So when looking at some of the odds recently, a few things really struck me as surprising, and I'm going to run them by you and see if you're as surprised as I am. The first of which, Buster, is that Cody Bellinger, who's coming off a rough season, along with Mookie Betts and Juan Soto, who are not, owns the best odds to win the National League MVP this season, which really surprised me. Obviously, 2 years ago, he was dynamite. He won the MVP. Last year, he really struggled with a bunch of areas of his game in which you and I discussed at length. But to me, to see him with tied for the best odds to win the National League MVP award, that really surprised me, and it tells me Vegas knows he's going to bounce back. What say you?
What say I is, what are the odds for Juan Soto?
All three of those players are plus 850. So what's interesting to me is that the Vegas views Bellinger sort of on the same level as those two other players, both of whom I expect to have much better years. But those guys know a lot more than we do sometimes.
Sometimes they do. In this case, I agree with you. You know, it'd be very interesting because the perception is that, you know, Cody remade his swing during the offseason going into 2020. And then during the shutdown, he kind of lost it. And you could tell he was completely lost. It's really, you know, he reminds me of your all-time favorite player, Cal Ripken. And Cal, over the course of his career, Cal did some amazing things. You know, he won a couple MVP awards. But he was not a naturally great hitter. Like, he had to work at it. And I think Cody Bellinger is very similar.
That's an interesting comparison. All right, here's my second smelly line for you. This also surprised me. Buster, the Tampa Bay Rays at 10-1 own longer odds to win the American League than the Toronto Blue Jays. So here's where I'm coming from. So last week, you asked me to find a couple teams that I thought were likely to regress. The Rays were that team for me in the American League. I did that totally based on the numbers, not based on the Vegas perspective. But today, that's sort of being reaffirmed by the folks out in the desert. Are you surprised to hear that? The Blue Jays own better odds to win the American League than the defending champion, Tampa Bay Rays.
Yes, and I'll make this comparison again when I talk about the Tampa Bay Rays. They are like the Virginia Cavaliers are to college basketball. That's what the Rays are to baseball. They run their system, and nobody does their system better than they do in terms of doing matchups, in terms of finding talent. I think that's a reaction to, you know, to trading Blake Snell, letting Charlie Morton go as a free agent. But that team is still loaded, and I agree with you. That surprises me.
All right, so far you and Vegas don't see eye to eye on either of those two. So I'll give you the third one here, Buster. And this is a player who's only played 21 games above Class A, Jared Kelnick, who you've talked about a bunch on the podcast. Buster, he owns the second best odds to win the American League Rookie of the Year award behind only Randy Arozarena. So that tells me, obviously, Vegas buys the talent, but also believes that he's going to see a lot of action this year, which we're not certain about at the moment. What say you?
Boy, oh boy. We talked last week about this weird political position now that the front office is in regarding Kelnick. And now that he's been that outspoken in what is certainly going to be a lost year. Now, I don't like that. I don't like that pick. I think that the Mariners will be disciplined. And also, Vegas is banking on that Kelnick will have a great spring, because I think that's the only way that he starts with the team this year or comes up early is if he has a great spring.
Awesome. So three smelly lines. You see it differently. For whatever it's worth, Randy Arozarena of the Rays is the only rookie with better odds to win that award than Kelnick.
I would bet against that, too.
All right.
So, yeah.
You're on the record.
I am on the record, and I've got to come up with my picks here in the next couple of weeks and see where we're going with that. You helped me with a Sunday column, of course. You help me every week. And last week I wrote about, in the aftermath of the Seattle Mariners situation, wrote about some of the ugly numbers and the ugly change in the landscape for players. You know, and some of it was based on conversations that I had with agents. One number that was really interesting that you generated for me, the way that there's been a reduction of team investment in players over 35 years old. You know, it used to be you could be a free agent, you could be an older player, and you know what? You'd still get really good contracts. That's not the case anymore necessarily.
Not at all, Buster. And because free agency was once a destination that it no longer is, it really made these numbers sort of stand out. So there have been, during this CBA cycle, about $200 million fewer dollars invested in players 35 years or older in free agency. And I suppose it should not come as a stark surprise just because it seems the game is skewing younger. But when you juxtapose that with the fact that non-tenders are increasing and players early in their career are dying to do these sort of team-friendly extensions because free agency is less of a destination, what these front offices have very successfully done is squeeze the player pool, the kinds of players that they're willing to pay. So right now, the middle class is almost non-existent in baseball. It's much less profitable than it once was. I mean, look, if you're a superstar in baseball, there's no better thing to be in sports than a superstar in baseball because you're going to get a nine-figure contract and it's all going to be guaranteed. But that's really the only player right now that the current CBA is sort of taking care of. And I would imagine that has to be Tony Clark's number one priority in the next negotiation, which I'm sure is not going to be all that pretty.
In the last negotiation, the night that agreement was forged, I heard from people on both sides, from club executives, from agents who were saying, oh, my God, this deal is a total disaster for the players. And you bore out some numbers that really explained or, I guess, illuminated that fact that this current collective bargaining agreement has been a complete and utter disaster for the players.
Well, I mean, ultimately, the responsibility of the people in charge here is to ensure that their laborers, the players in this case, make as much money as possible. Now, there are obviously other factors to this, but that's probably the most boiled down thing. And during this CBA cycle, Buster, the average player's salary has declined. It's unfathomable. In each of the previous three CBA cycles, the average player's salary increased by at least 15%. But you look at the NBA, you look at the NFL. Their ownership groups, their front offices are not using the pandemic as a crutch. They're using it as merely an obstacle that they're almost collectively choosing to overcome. That's not the way that it's been in Major League Baseball. The pandemic happening when it did, juxtaposed with the CBA ending when it is going to create, I think, probably the messiest thing that we've seen in baseball, probably in my lifetime, or at least since the player strike. And like you said, I don't know that there's a better indication of how the players have been raked over the coals by the fact that over the course of a five-year span, the average player salary has declined, whereas you see franchise valuations skyrocketing. Obviously, those things aren't a direct corollary, but it's concerning nonetheless.
And by the way, just for in case anybody's thinking, well, yeah, the numbers dropped because of the pandemic, that trend was in effect well before we ever heard about the word coronavirus.
Correct. Hembo, that's exactly true.
Thanks for doing this.
Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo. Right.
Len Casper is the radio voice of the Chicago White Sox. It still feels jarring, Len, to say that. How are you doing?
Hey, Buster. I'm great. Yeah, I know it shocked a lot of people, not only in Chicago, but around baseball. And I grew up listening to Ernie Harwell every night as a Tiger fan in Michigan. And when I was 12 or 13, I wanted to be the radio voice of a team. And the way my career went, I got an opportunity to do television. So I've done TV for the last 20 years. And I think when you get to a certain age, and I just turned 50, you start to think about, your legacy and kind of the things you want to accomplish. And there was a radio opening in my city. I didn't have to move. And it just kind of worked out that way. And hopefully this will be my last job, and I can do it for maybe a couple decades.
And when I talked to Boog Chombi about you, too, he mentioned that, you know, you wanted the opportunity to do postseason games because, you know, for listeners who are not fully aware of this, I'm sure they would be if they put some thought into it. Folks who work on TV side, you get into the postseason and then the national TV deals rights holders kick in. And I've been there where, you know, I've seen you down on the field waiting to do post-game interviews while I was doing a game. And I remember the same thing with Michael Kay. Almost made me feel queasy. Like, boy, these guys should absolutely be doing these games, having done the games all year, and now you're going to have the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, that was absolutely a factor. And you're right. You and I have been side by side for a lot of national games over the years. I've dabbled in radio. And, you know, for me, it's in terms of the postseason, it's not about having my call be remembered. That's not it. It's about the work. And I think you're like me. The way you enjoy baseball the most is when you're there doing your job. And that changes for the local television announcers once you get into October. And it's funny, when David Ross called me after the move, I said to him, so let's go back to 16 and going into the playoffs. Let's say Joe Maddon brings you into his office and says, Rossi, man, what a great year. You're so good with John Lester. I know you're going to hang it up at the end of the month. We're going to do everything we can to win you a World Series ring, but I've only got a 25-man roster and I need an extra arm in the bullpen, so we're going to go with two catchers. It's going to be Montero and Contreras. You're going to travel with us, but you're not on the roster. I said, how would you have felt? And he said, I would have been crushed. I said, well, that's kind of what happens to the TV guys during the season. And he said, oh, I totally get it. So, yeah, you just feel a little left out. And for me, you know, being on radio, knowing that as long as the White Sox go, I'll be sitting in the same chair is really cool.
And you're going to be calling games for a team that goes into 2021 with so much hope. And, of course, a new manager. What are your first impressions, your early impressions of Tony La Russa as coming back as manager of the White Sox?
Well, like a lot of people, when it originally happened, and this was before I made the move, you know, the initial reaction was surprise. He hadn't managed in 9 years. I guess you could say eight, because he did manage the National League and the All-Star game in 2012. But, you know, I've run into Tony, as I know you have, over the years. He's worked in several front offices. And for Tony, life in baseball is divided in two. It's either you're upstairs or downstairs. And, you know, listening to him in his introductory news conference and then talking to him a few times, you know, going into spring training personally, downstairs is where he is most comfortable. And I know he's really pumped to get back in the dugout. I think the players on this team have been really impressed, even those who were maybe a little suspicious of how this would go. You know, I've been around a lot of really good managers, Buster, Lou Piniella, Jack McKeon, remember, with the Marlins, was in his 70s, guys who've been around for a long time. I think Tony will help make this team as good as it can be, and I'm not worried about that at all. I'm most curious to see how he handles his bullpen, because he and Dave Duncan, obviously, were kind of the modern godfathers of the specialization of bullpens. I don't know if he's going to have a seventh-inning guy and an eighth-inning guy, because he's got like five options there before Liam Hendricks in the ninth. So I'm looking forward to see how he'll tinker late in ball games with his bullpen.
And one of the cool moments that's going to happen for Tony this year is at some point he's going to move into second place all-time for wins managers, which is incredible. 2,728 that he has. He's third place all time. John McGraw is just 35 wins away, according to Baseball Reference. That's unbelievable to me. Like, I knew that, but then I sort of processed it over the weekend, Len, and the idea that someone at this stage would pass John McGraw, that's absolutely amazing. What's the biggest concern on the roster for you when you look at the 2021 White Sox?
There aren't a lot, to be honest, and I've been asked a ton about the parallels between the 21 Sox and the 15 or 16 Cubs. And there definitely are some, with some kind of key off-season acquisitions, big name manager coming aboard with some really interesting young talent. But I think the biggest question is going to be 4 and 5 in the rotation. I think Dylan Cease will be the four. And, you know, he's coming off a disappointing year, but I think the sky's the limit. Hey, everybody can probably say the fifth spot of the rotation is a concern. You've got Carlos Rodon. You've got Reynaldo Lopez, probably the two guys who will battle for that spot. But the idea of Garrett Crochet and Michael Kopech, who I would anticipate, in a year or two will be a part of this rotation, they're going to be in the bullpen to start the year. Wow. That is really intriguing to me. So I think in a weird way, the question marks lead to strength in that those kids could probably battle for a rotation spot. But this is a championship window, and, Kopech hasn't pitched in a long time. Crochet was drafted last year. I think they want to make sure that they ease them in a little bit. And then the other one, again, is kind of an interesting one. Their opening day DH may be a 22-year-old kid making his big league debut, Andrew Vaughn. It's early this spring, but he's looked very good at the plate. Abreu likes to play first base every day. The one concern you would have would be development of a young player, and it's hard, I think, for a guy in his spot to be a DH at that age. But, as I said on the radio yesterday, if he helps the White Sox win the World Series this year and you feel like maybe his development was hurt just a little bit, I think he'll gladly put on that ring.
Player you can't wait to watch every day after watching him from afar while working for the Cubs.
Great question. Tim Anderson, is such an exciting player. I've been fortunate to watch Javi Baez over the years, and I've said the two most exciting players in baseball are Baez and Fernando Tatis Jr., but I'd put Tim Anderson right up there. He hit 335 2 years ago, 322 last year. I think he's made a lot of improvements defensively. He's got a lot of moxie. He has already basically laid down the gauntlet and said the White Sox are better than the Twins. There's a lot of talk about bat flips and how Tony will handle it. So, I really look forward to just being around, hopefully at some point as the pandemic comes to an end, be around Tim Anderson, because I find him to be a really interesting guy. I'll tell you a quick story. When I got to the press box for the Cactus League opener, the guys came out to take batting practice on the field at Camelback Ranch. And Tim saw Jason Benetti, the White Sox TV voice, in the booth adjacent to ours, and said, "Hey, good to see you." And Jason pointed at me and said, "Hey, here's the new guy." And without missing a beat, Tim Anderson said, "No more Cubby blue for you. It's all black and white from here on out." So I felt like I finally belonged.
That's awesome. Yeah, I agree with you. He's the guy that I love to watch. Joe McEwing talking about how invested he is in getting better every day. Last one for you. Who's the X-factor player on this roster who could take them from good to great?
I'm another great question. I'm going to go Aaron Bummer. Last year he did not have a full season, but he's got a crazy good sinking fastball. A left-hander who probably could be their closer right now. I think it's possible by the end of the season, Buster, you could be ranking Aaron Bummer as one of the top three or four relievers in the league.
That's awesome. I'll be listening all year, sir. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Buster. I hope to see you at the ballpark.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. First up, we got our guy PK Steinberg. He writes in, across Major League Baseball, and this conversation blew up in my mentions last night, is catcher the weakest overall position?
Yeah, I'd say so. And part of that reason why, part of the reason why for that, I think, is because of how teams have handled the position differently. A lot of clubs have focused on getting guys who are really good at framing pitches and developing that particular skill. And also we've seen a lot of teams kind of go, like the NFL has a two running back system. We're seeing a lot of major league teams have multiple catchers, as opposed to, in the past, where a lot of teams, you could count on the catcher to play 100, 135 games, which is why when we talked about JT Realmuto, how it's amazing how much difference there is between him as the best player at that position in the game and the second best player in the game. I mean, he really stands out in a way that Mariano Rivera used to stand out among relievers.
Got it. Joe Clark is up next at Astro Joe 319. He writes, and I'm looking for Lance McCullers Jr. to take a leap this year if he's healthy. What do you make of Lance and the rest of my Astros rotation?
That it's underrated. Look, and I've heard that from people within the Astros organization. They feel like that because the headliner, Justin Verlander, is basically not going to be available to that team during the course of the year, maybe at the end of the year he will, that we're all overlooking that rotation. They feel like they have a lot more depth. And it's been interesting to see tweets from the likes of Alex Bregman talking about how good McCullers looks this spring.
We got Bobby Meacham up next at Bobby Meacham 1. He writes in, longtime listener, first time tweeter. Thanks for tweeting, Bobby. He says, when guys like you, Passan, Rosenthal, etc., get scoops from clubhouse or front office sources, what's in it for the source? Do you become friends or do they just share or do they expect something in return?
Well, look, you know, I can only speak for myself. I hope that a lot of the folks that I deal with, you know, believe that they are going to ensure that the information is going to be presented accurately when I, you know, report something. You know, certainly everyone has their reasons for doing things. Maybe they want to, you know, get a narrative out there ahead of time. You know, maybe they just want the information out there, like if it's a potential signing to chase up other bidders. I will say, and it's a huge concern, and it always has been, but I think especially now since the advent of social media, I see a ton of examples of transactional journalism. And it kind of makes me sick to my stomach. You know, I remember a few years ago, there was a story done. I can't be too specific, and in fairness to the people involved, there was a story done about a player. And it was clear, you know, knowing the background, that this was an effort to remake the player's image. And as soon as I saw it, I knew, well, when big news comes out on that player, I know exactly who's going to break it. And that's exactly what happened. I could have I predicted it 3 months in advance. And I see so much of that now. And it really, it makes me sick to my stomach.
That's weird that these sources aren't coming to you for friendship. As
I know.
A trait.
No. Yeah, exactly.
You're such a fun guy, Buster. I like you a lot.
Sweet.
Last one. Let's go a little more inside journalism baseball. Robert Beretta writes in at Holler at Rob. Buster, it sounded like Timmy's email notifications were blowing up during Monday's show. How many emails are in your inbox during the height of the baseball season?
I tell you what, they have climbed exponentially in this Zoom world that we have because we are now getting emails from all 30 teams. And thankfully, because they're trying to help us out. But they're saying, you know, Joe Maddon is about ready to go into the interview room. Sign on to Zoom now. And I'm getting somewhere in the range of 200 a day.
Wow.
At the end of every day, I'm having to cull through those and make sure that I don't miss important emails as opposed to some of these Zoom notifications. And again, the teams have been great this spring in terms of alerting us to when players and managers are available.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Tweet at Buster for friendship and scoops. And we will talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to David Schoenfield, to Hembo, to Len, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Remember, hate and inequality based on race is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.